Reading from the Jiva Dharma, chapter 17. I think it's something about the jivas entangled with Maya, but anyway. Reading from chapter 17. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Rajanath, what is the ultimate destination of the unalloyed bhaktis of Sri Gaur Kishore Chaitanya Mahaprabhu? Om Janatimarandasya Gananjana Shalakaya Taksurunmulatam Yena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha Sri Chaitanya Manobhistam Tapitam Yena Bhutale Sayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Tapadantitam Vanshakalpa Tarubhyascha Vipashindu Bhayevacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namah Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Srivasadi Gaur Bhaktavrinda Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Okay, we're following the enlightenment of Rajanath in the Jiva Dharma. I think most of the people here have been following it, but it's a novel by Bhaktivinoda Thakur about people coming to Krishna consciousness after the time of Lord Chaitanya. And we're following one former logician named Rajanath, who somehow has become an initiated devotee of Babaji Maharaj in Gojrudweep, and he's visiting him regularly and hearing his Hari Katha and becoming very, very enlivened. And right now he's studying with him what's called Dashamula, which are 10 instructions in Gaudiya Vaishnavism, which comprise the full scope of the philosophy of Gaudiya Vaishnavism. I believe there are 8 verses on Sambandhagyan, which is metaphysics and epistemology of Krishna consciousness, and 1 verse on Abhidhayagyan, the method of practice of Krishna consciousness, of realizing the absolute truth. And the last verse is on Piyojana Gyan, the goal of life, which is Prema Bhakti. So now he's studying, I forget which number of the Dashamula, but it was an answer to a question of how the jiva can become liberated from Maya, from illusion. And there's been an elaborate discussion, including describing the symptoms of one who's liberated. So how can the jiva become liberated? And there's description. What happens is that you built up what's called bhakti prada sukriti, the sukriti that gives you bhakti. And basically, just being in a spiritual culture of fortune, you may attend a spiritual function, meet a spiritual devotee, follow a spiritual holiday, eat spiritual foodstuffs, and it builds up. And it builds up until one comes to the point where he has the urge to not just engage, he'll build up until he'll engage in devotional service, but not pure devotional service. It means he may be ritualistic, you know, attend the temple, attend the kirtan, but not really yet have the conception that bhakti and the goal of life is to please Krishna. Bhakti is that heart with the full intention, which has nothing but the full intention to please God. And therefore follow the will of God through the shastras coming through Guru, which includes the practices to increase that intention and finally bring it to the highest level of intention or desire, which is called prema bhakti. So he described this, and as we know, it's in a very, very analytical way, and so many questions are asked. You know, if even ordinary karma or wisdom or renunciation is something can bring you to bhakti, then why don't we call it the sukriti that gives bhakti? And because it usually takes someone someplace else. It's very rare that it does. And really, bhakti means sadhu sangha, because bhakti is in the heart of the devotee. Even God, when he appears as Chaitanya, when he appears as, when he wants to get love of Godhead, he has to appear as his devotee who gets love of Godhead from the devotee. Otherwise, we see in the beginning of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's life, he didn't have bhakti. This bhakti is in the heart of the devotee. And the whole sequence of how one achieves perfection, when that sukriti, bhakti pradat sukriti, increases, then after many births, one can come to pure devotional service, where you perform the activity not... You can perform bhakti, but it's pure devotional service when you perform it for the pleasure of Krishna. Because you can perform the same activities for some other reason, for yourself. And then he asks how many types of anarthas there are. And he described, that was very nice, sarup, prama, illusion about one's identity, which leads to asat Krishna thirst, the things that are not real, like celestial pleasures and wealth. And then there's aparad, offense, where you not only are searching for material things, but you do something antagonistic in relationship to God or the devotees, or have some type of attitude of antagonism, even subtly. And then there's hidaya dulabhayam, just a weakness of resolve. And then the question was asked, can someone who has no trace of anartha, can he be liberated? And it describes how rare that liberation is. It's very rare liberation, but one can become free of all anarthas, yes, then they can become liberated. And then he asked, at what stage do you actually become completely liberated? See, the focus is everything is sadhu sangha. I mentioned this many, many times. I don't know where I heard it, but the path of bhakti moves forward on the track of sadhu sangha. And what sadhu sangha means, what is bhakti? Bhakti is the desire to serve Krishna. And we reflect the qualities good or bad of those who we associate with. And the Upadeshamrita, it describes that there are six types of loving exchanges. And the real gist of it is that these type of loving exchanges actually open up a transference of heart from an advanced devotee to our own soul. So, Dadati Pritagrinati, Guyam Atyachi Prichiti, Bhunte Bhojiyate Chaiva, six lakshanams, symptoms of loving exchanges. We give gifts, we accept gifts, we inquire in confidence, we reveal, we explain confidentially, and we take prasadam, we give prasadam. Anyway, in what stage we liberated? We can be liberated from the very beginning. In a sense that liberation is connection to the higher plane. So if we surrender a guru who represents the higher plane, even if we're not free from the modes of material nature, we will be liberated in the sense we will be acting strictly from a higher plane rather than our impulses. The impulses may still be there, but we've so thoroughly identified with the identity that I am the servant of Guru and Krishna that we're no longer guided by the impulses from our lower plane. We're guided by the will of God. But there's another higher liberation called Sarup Gati, Sarup Mukti, where you begin to have a conception of your spiritual form. And then there is Vastu Mukti, where you actually achieve a spiritual body. And then the final discussion was, how many types of liberations are there for the jiva? And there's basically two. There's the Nitya Mukti and the Buddha Mukti. Nitya Mukti means they're always liberated, and Buddha Mukti means they became liberated. And those that are always liberated, there's two types, Aishvarya Gata and Gata, and Madhurya Madhaka, Madhurya Gata. Those who are attracted by the relationship with God in reverence, beautiful thing, in the mood of service and devotion. And Madhurya Gata, those who are attracted by his features of sweetness, and these jivas, they're attracted by become personal associates of Sri Krishna in Goloka. And he makes an interesting point. The jivas who are attracted by Krishna's Aishwarya become the associates of Narayan and Vaikuntha, and they are particles of spiritual effulgence from Mula Sankarshan, who rides in Vaikuntha. And those who are attracted by Sri Krishna, they come from particles of spiritual effulgence manifest from Sri Baladeva, who resides in Goloka Vrindavan. So again, there's how many types of liberation? Well, one type of liberation where you become an associate of Narayan, and one liberation you become associate of Krishna. And the jivas that have the desire to be associate of Narayan, Bhaktivinoda Thakur explains, they're particles of spiritual effulgence emanating from Mula Sankarshan, resides in Vaikuntha, and those who are attracted to Sri Krishna, the master of Gokula, a master of Goloka Vrindavan, they are products of the effulgence of Sri Baladeva. And there are three kinds of Bhada Mukta Jivas, those who became attained perfection. Remember, those are the ones that were always perfected, which is very interesting because it's very interesting. And this is why the concept of origins becomes very, very difficult to ascertain. And this was described previously in the Jiva Dharma. I forgot which section it was, probably on the origin of Jiva, because it's a realm beyond time, and we're describing it through, you know, language is based, and logic is based on our experience. And we don't have the experience of a realm beyond time, so it's hard to express that to us, just as a young girl to explain to what sex life is before she's before she's become mature. There's no way to explain it. She doesn't have a frame of reference for it. So we really don't have a frame of reference. So we get these kind of contradictions that they're eternally liberated souls attracted by his feature of sweetness, but they are particles of spiritual effulgence manifesting from Sri Baladeva, as if they were born at a particular time. But anyway, interesting. So, and then there's three Bhadajis, those that are attracted to Bhagavan's feature of opulence and majesty, Aishwarya Gita, and those who are attracted to Bhagavan's feature of sweetness, Madhurya Gita, and those who are attracted to Bhagavan's impersonal effulgence, Brahma Jyoti Gita, that's what they attain. And they all have different features. Those who are attracted to the opulence of God, they become eternal associates of Narayan, and they achieve Salokya Mukti, the opulence of residing in his planets. Those who are attracted to Sri Krishna's sweetness attain direct service to him and when they become liberated, the eternal abode of Vrindavan. And the jiva who wants to merge into his impersonal effulgence attains Suyuja Mukti. They merge into his effulgence. Now we get to today's question, which is very, very, very interesting. And I think the questions and discussions that we have now will come to a higher level. And I was even wondering, you know, this is no longer going to be, well, very soon, not very soon. I mean, we're still quite a way off, but at a particular time, we're going to come to subjects of Raghunuga Bhakti and Prema Bhakti, and I guess anyone will be welcome to join. But what is the ultimate destination of the unalloyed bhaktas of Gaur Kishore? So he described the destination of the people aspiring for Krishna. They go to Krishna Loka, and those who want to worship God in opulence, they go here to worship Narayan, and they reside with Narayan, Salokya Mukti. And those who want the Brahman effulgence, they merge, and that's called Sayuja Mukti. But what about those who worship Gaur Kishore? And it's very fascinating what he says. Sri Krishna and Sri Gorky Shore are non-different in their tattva, absolute nature. They are both shelters of Madhurya Ras. However, there is a slight difference between them because Madhurya Ras manifests in two ways. So in other words, their tattva is the same. It's the same person. It's the same manifestation of God and sweetness. It's not Aishvaryagata. It's not seeking opulence or to worship God in opulence. So the tattva is the same. They're both shelters of Madhurya Ras. But they're different, slight difference, because Madhurya Ras manifests in two ways. Just like a particular person, he may be magnanimous or he may be intimate. He may want to enjoy intimate love. He may want to enjoy the feelings of compassion. So it's the same person who has different moods. So first he's explaining this tattva, that the tattva of Sri Gorkishore and Sri Krishna are the same. But one Krishna is in the mood of Madhurya, sweetness, and the other is in the mood of Audharya, magnanimity. Sri Krishna manifests his original spiritual form where Madhurya is prominent and Sri Gauranga form is manifest when Audharya is prominent. So it's the same person, the same tattva, the same manifestation of God, with the difference of a predominance of one mood or another. It doesn't mean that Krishna doesn't have magnanimity, and it doesn't mean that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu doesn't have sweetness. But when the magnanimity of Swayam Bhagavan becomes prominent more than the sweetness, that's Gauranga, Sri Gauranga form is manifest. And when the Madhurya is manifest somewhat more than the Audharya, it's Sri Krishna. Similarly, the transcendental Vrindavan also has two divisions, Sri Krishna's abode and Sri Gaura's abode. So when Krishna, the welling of magnanimity becomes predominant in his nature, Radha Krishna becomes Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Radha Krishna becomes Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and Vrindavan becomes Sridhar Mayapur. The eternally perfect and liberated jivas who reside in Krishna's abode as his associates are attracted first to Madhurya and then to Audharya. So, and the people that are in that in a particular mood, and the people that are in that, it's so, and now it's so many interesting things. Eternally perfect liberated jivas who reside in Krishna's abode as associates, they're primarily attracted to Madhurya and then Audharya. Their attraction for intimacy becomes first, and then their magnanimity manifests. And you can see that with people. It's very sweet. There may be a loving relationship between two people, and they may also be magnanimous. But their love between themselves may be more than their attractions, you know, their compassion for others. Although that compassion may be there, it comes secondary. And in terms of the eternal perfect liberated souls who reside in Sri Gaura's abode, they are blissfully absorbed in Audharya, magnanimity, and then Madhurya. Now this is wonderful. Some of them reside in both abodes simultaneously by expansions of the self, while others reside in one spiritual form in only one abode and not the other. Those who only worship Sri Gaura during their period of sadhana only serve Sri Gaura when they achieve perfection, while those who only serve Sri Krishna during their period of sadhana serve Sri Krishna on achieving perfection. However, those who worship the forms of both Sri Krishna and Sri Gaura during their periods of sadhana manifest two forms when they attain perfection and reside in both abodes simultaneously. The truth of the simultaneously oneness and difference of Sri Gaura and Sri Krishna is very confidential secret. When Vrajanath heard all these teachings about the state of the jivas who are liberated from maya, he could no longer keep his composure. Brimming with emotion, he fell down at the elderly Babaji's lotus feet. Crying profusely, Babaji Mahasaya picked him up and embraced him. It was already quite late in the night. Vrajanath took leave of Babaji Mahasaya and went home, totally engrossed in meditating on Babaji's instructions. These are very, imagine when he hears this about Sri Gaurakishore and the worship of him, the worship of Sri Krishna, and how you can manifest in two abodes. When Vrajanath reached home, he took his meal, and while doing so, he warned his grandmother sternly, "Grandmother, if you people want to see me here, stop all this talk about my marriage, and do not keep any sort of contact with Vaini Madhava." He was the rascal trying to stop his Krishna consciousness by destroying his faith in his guru, which didn't work because his guru could see his heart and see what this Vaini Madhava was doing. Vrajanatha's grandmother was very intelligent. Understanding Vrajanatha's mood, she decided to postpone any questions of marriage. From the kind of sentiment that he is displaying, she thought, if he is forced too much, he might leave for Vrindavan or Varanasi. Let Bhagavan decide as he will. Thus ends the 17th chapter of Jiva Dharma, entitled Prameya, Jiva's Liberation from Maya. Prameya means what is to be. And pramana means the evidence that what you are seeking is true. Okay, chapter 18, Prameya, Veda, 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 Tattva. Vaini Madhava had a wicked mind. Thus, when Vrajanath scorned him, he decided to seek revenge by teaching Vrajanath and the Mayapur Vaishnavas a lesson. He made a plan with some like-minded friends that when Vrajanath returned from Mayapur, they would surround him in a secluded place near Lakshmana Hill and give him a sound thrashing. Somehow or other, Vrajanath got wind of all this and consulted with Babaji. They agreed that he would come to Mayapur less frequently and then only during the day and accompanied by a bodyguard. Padam Padam what Padam Padam Yati Padam Natesha. This world is just, it's always there at every step. Because the world moves according to the will of God, not according to our attachments and desires. And when things go against our attachment desires, we suffer. But when Krishna moves things against our attachment and desires, it's only to help us awaken the soul. Vrajanath had some 10 tenants in the village, amongst whom Harish was expert at stick fighting. One day, Vrajanath called him and made a request. He said, "Harish, I'm having a little difficulty these days, but if you help me, I might have a way out." Harish said, "Thakur, I can lay down my life to for you I will kill your enemy today if you tell me. Vajranath replied, Vaini Madhava is a very wicked man, and he means to cause some trouble. He is creating so much disturbance that I dare not go to the Vaishnavas in Srivasangam. He has arranged with some of his devious friends to create trouble for me on my way home. Harish became disturbed when he heard this, and he replied, Thakur, as long as there is breath in my body, you need to have no fear. It looks as if a stick of mine will soon come to good use against Vaini Madhava. Just take me along with you whenever you go to Mayapur, and I will handle 100 opponents by myself. People are bold. Some people just have courage. It sounds like a person's desire to protect people may be stronger than his desire to live. People are fearless. After Vajranath had made this arrangement, Harish, he resumed his visits to Mayapur every second or fourth day, but he could not stay late. Yet he remained dissatisfied within himself when he could not discuss Tattva. After some 10 or 20 days, he passed in this way. The wicked Vaini Madhava was bitten by a snake and died. When Vajranath heard the news, he wondered, did he meet such a fate because of his envy of the Vaishnavas? Then he concluded, his allotted span of life is finished, and so he died. Adya bhavda satanteva mityurvai praninam dhuva Srimad Bhagavatam 10.138. One may die today or after hundreds of years, but death is sure for every living entity. This is an eternal truth. So your birth, bhoga, your enjoyment, and distress, and your death is fixed at birth. But somehow or other, God is so, has such inconceivable nature that he's arranged this, that just after a very lot of his offense to the Vaishnavas. Now my path to Srivasangam in Mayapur is clear. That day, Vajranath reached Srivasangam a little after dusk. He offered his obeisances to Raghunatha Dasa Babaji and said, from today I will be able to come to serve your lotus feet every day, for the obstacles in the form of Vaini Madhava has left the world. At first, the soft-hearted Babaji became a little disturbed on hearing about the death of this spiritually unconscious person, Anudita Vivik Jiva. Then he calmed himself and said, Sukarma Phalabhuk Puman, everyone enjoys or suffers the result of his karma. The Jiva belongs to Krishna, and he will go wherever Krishna sends him. Anyway, Baba, I hope you have no other anxiety. Vajranath, only one. I have missed hearing your nectarian talks all these days. Today I want to hear the remaining instructions of Dashamula. Babaji, I'm available to you. Now, where did we stop last time? And here, are there any questions in your heart after our last conversation? That's what I noticed in India, that the asada means one who is open. He's open. His heart is for others. He gives them time appropriately. He says, I'm always available to you. Vajranath, what is the name of Sri Gaurakishore's pure and invaluable philosophical teachings? The previous acharyas have established the philosophy of Dvaitavad, exclusive monism, Dvaitavad, dualism, Shuddha Dvaitavad, pure monism, Shishta Dvaitavad, specific monism, and Dvaita Dvaitavad, dualism with monism. Has Sri Gauranga accepted any of these, or has he founded a different philosophical school? So every sampradaya, every group, must have a commentary on Vedanta, and a specific philosophical outlook in terms of God's connection with this world. When you were instructing me about the disciplic succession, you said that Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu belongs to the Brahma Sampradaya. In that case, we should consider him to be an acharya of Madhya's, Acharya's, Dvaitavad, but it's not. It's different. Even though we're Brahma Gaudiya Madhav, Brahma Madhva Gaudiya Sampradaya. So now comes the eighth verse of the Dashabula, which will answer this question about our philosophical conception of the world, what's our relationship with matter. Hare Shakti Savachirasid Akilam Syat Parinati Vivartam No Satyam Shititamitivarudham Kalivalam Aveda Bedo Shutiva Hitta Tatsam Sunivas Valilam Tapraim Nasitua Bhavati Nitaram Nitjifishaye. The entire spiritual and material creation is a manifestation of Sri Krishna's Shakti. The impersonal philosophy of illusion, Vivartabad, is false. It is an impurity that has been produced by Kali Yuga and is contrary to the teachings of the Vedas. Vedaishya sarva hameva vedyo vedanta vid veda vid evachava. All the Vedas I have to know. So this Vivartavad, that everything is illusion, is false, is wrong. The Vedas support achintya veda veda tattva, inconceivably one in difference, as the pure and absolute doctrine. And one can attain pure love to the eternal absolute when he accepts this principle. The conclusive teachings of the Upanishads are known as Vedanta, and in order to bring their precious meaning to light, Vyasadeva compiled a book of four chapters called Brahma Sutra or Vedanta Sutra. The Vedanta commands great respect among the intellectual class. In principle, Vedanta Sutra is widely accepted as the proper exposition of truths taught in the Vedas. From this Vedanta Sutra, the different acharyas extract different conclusions, which are just suitable to support their own philosophy. You know, I have to go. Again, it's late at night. If anybody would like to say hello.
Hare Krishna Guru Maharaj, this is Brother Radhe.
Radhe, Hare Krishna.
Hare
Krishna. Anybody else?
Hare Krishna Maharaj, this is Himanshu. Can you hear me?
Himanshu, thanks for coming on. Any questions?
I did have a question. Is that okay?
Yeah.
Somebody's like chanting Japa online. Is there possible for that person to mute their phone?
Well, I'm gonna do something. I'm gonna mute the. Hey, Manchu, can you unmute yourself? You know how to do that? I think it's star six, maybe.
You can hear me now, Maharaj?
Yeah.
Yeah, my question is, it's a simple one. When we were in Jagannath Puri, you were explaining how Lord Chaitanya has the internal and external reasons for appearance, and the external does not mean superficial, meaning that they're just as relevant as the internal. We're hearing today that in Gauralila, Audharya is predominating. Not that Madhurya isn't there, but Audharya is predominating, which is a little difficult for me to understand in one sense, because we always hear that what initiates Gauralila is Krishna's desire to taste the mood of Radharani. So it would seem that Madhurya would be more prominent in Gauralila. Of course, we also hear he also wanted to dispense Braja Bhakti to the people of this world, but his initial reason was to really taste the mood of Radharani. So how do I understand that Audharya is more prominent in Gauralila?
Fine. Thank you, Himanshu. You ask really, really good questions. I have to really think about that. So let's just go back and just that the internal reason to come is to taste Krishna consciousness, which is Madhurya, right? And the external reason is to share it, which is Odarya. So let me read again what Bhaktivinoda Thakur says. Well, that may even confirm that it's not superficial. It seems that it says it's prominent, but it's his mission. I mean, is to give it so and to taste it. But it seems that it says that. It's not superficial to give it. And here, it makes even a stronger reason that it's not superficial. Because actually, that mood is predominant in Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Odarya to give. So he comes, it doesn't say one or the other. In the Chaitanya Charitamrita, it says he came for both. Krishna came to experience that love and to propagate that love. It doesn't say one is better than the other. So then it's certainly not superficial, and that only confirms the fact that his external reason, well, what it means is that his reason for coming for others seems to be more prominent than the reason he came for himself. And that's his predominant mood. I have no other explanation other than that. Only what's said here. And I have to think of it further. Anything else, Himanshu? I will?
Thank you, Maharaj.
Okay, good question. Anybody else like to say hello? Okay, that's it today. I'm going because it's past my bedtime. Hari Bol. Manchakopa Dhruva Sakavasindhapavacharya.